Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last week, the prestigious UC Hastings College of the Law Board of Directors voted to change the college's name. UC Hastings was founded in 1878 by Serenus Hastings, one of the largest landowners in California and the state's first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. According to the historical record, Serenus Hastings perpetrated genocidal acts against Native Californians in the 1850s in the Round and Eden Valleys. At least 5,600 Yuki tribe members across Eden and Round Valleys of Northern California were massacred by officially sanctioned militias and U.S. troops from the 1840s to the 1870s. In 2017, John Briscoe, a former adjunct professor at UC Hastings, wrote an op-ed in the San Francisco Chronicle called "The Moral Case for Renaming Hastings College of the Law, documenting Hastings' role in the killing of Native people in California." Here is John Briscoe on KPIX-CBS.
They even submitted bills to the legislature to be reimbursed for their, quote, expenses in carrying out these killings. This is the history of California that, sorry to say, we need to teach.
And that is a clip from KPIX-CBS, John Briscoe, a former adjunct professor at UC Hastings. Shortly after, the dean and chancellor of the school, David Fagman, formed a commission to investigate Serenus Hastings' role, but still argued that the college should keep its name while pushing for restorative justice. Well, after years of research and input from Yuki tribe members, alumni, and historian Dr. Brendan Lindsay, last week the school's board of directors voted to change the name. Also on the school's board is a direct descendant of Serenus Hastings. Dean Fagman now says he supports the name change. Joining us to discuss this history are two guests. Deb Hutt is a Yuki tribeswoman who lives in the Round Valley. She told the New York Times that a group of alumni and other concerned San Franciscans reached out to her after an article about this issue ran in the New York Times. Hi, Deb. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Rose.
Good morning.
Glad to be here.
Great to have you. Dr. Brendan Lindsay is Associate Professor of History at Cal State University, Sacramento, where he teaches California, Native American, and U.S. history. He is the author of the award-winning book, Murder State, California's Native American Genocide, 1846 to 1873. Dr. Lindsay was commissioned in 2017 by Hastings to research and write a historical paper describing its founders' actions in the Round and Eden Valleys, and to place those actions in the context of the history of California's Native population. The Dean of Hastings also invited Professor Lindsay to serve on the committee. Hi, Dr. Lindsay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here. Good morning, Rose. Good morning, Deb.
Well, good morning. Thank you both so much. Deb, I want to start off with you. This is a big question, but what has this experience been like for you? I mean, Dr. Lindsay has an amazing book that came out in, was it 2012, Dr. Lindsay?
2012 was when it first came out.
2012. Yes. And what's incredible about this is you have a quote from Hastings in the introduction of your book. So you have this information in 2012. The San Francisco Chronicle runs an op-ed. The New York Times writes about this, and it really explodes. And Deb, I just wonder, what has this experience been like for you overall?
Well, it's been very enlightening, to say the least, with the article from the New York Times. It was enlightening to see the comments that were made, over 1,000 of them from all over the world. Mass media is a great tool, and it encouraged us even more on our frustrating journey. So it's been enlightening, liberating lately to know that there's a lot of people out there that are not just sympathetic but very supportive. But it's been a frustrating journey, to say the least.
Can you elaborate on that? Why has it been frustrating?
Well, first of all, we should probably thank the college for bringing this forward. I imagined if it would have started with us first, it might not have been as well received. When we talk about restorative justice, I thought that approach was when the victim was sat down with the offender. And I think for us, that's the frustration, is it's taken until early this year for us to actually make our first contact with the college. And all along, we were reading articles or, you know, comments that we're, you know, communicating, we're collaborating with the Yuki, and we're sitting here as a group saying, we ask you to slow down, and we really want to get to know you first before we even consider talking to you. And that's where we thought we were. Until we saw some of the initiatives going forward, we see that, you know, we're not really needed. We were told by the dean that they are a sovereign entity and that the tribe is a sovereign entity. And so that's why they need to consult with the tribal council. But we're not invited to the table. We had to work for about a year and a half to just to meet with them face to face. So and I should say that although we've given input, it seems like it's landing on deaf ears because they don't respond like they have heard us. Anyway, that's the frustrating journey is dealing with the the bureaucratic entities.
Deb, this is really important because I was a bit confused about when the tribe got involved. Now, I read this 29-page report that came out, Hastings Legacy Review Committee report to Chancellor and Dean David Fagman. This was in 2020, and it kind of gave you the background. And at this time, they talked about why they didn't want to change the name. But based on this report, it sounded like some tribal members were involved. So when did you all get involved in this process?
Well, we were asked to be involved via the tribal council. Let me backtrack here a little bit. The Round Valley Indian Tribes is a confederation of seven tribes, and Yuki is one of those tribes. And we are governed by a tribal council of seven, but those seven do not represent those seven tribes. The tribal council also has not come to our meetings to know what our interests or concerns are. So when Hastings and the tribal council meet, we have an issue with, you know, who are you talking to? You're not talking to the Yuki. So when did we get involved? We heard about this when it was brought to Sinkione Wilderness Council. We have a Round Valley Indian representative, and she happens to be Yuki. That's Mona, my sister. And she brought it back to the council to the tribal council, and because it was a Yuki issue, and anybody that claims to be Yuki is enrolled in the Round Valley Indian Tribes. So she felt it was proper to bring it here. And later the council, the Sinkione Council, felt the same, and put out an announcement to that fact, a letter that said they do support us. So that's when we became aware of it. We got the same report that you did. I mean, that Brendan wrote, that was given as part of the recommendation. So that's when we became more actively involved, because through that, the college had requested to the council that they would like to have a Yuki committee. And so we gathered together in 2020. And you know, that was after that report, although it sounds like they worked with a committee, they didn't. But the tribe made a resolution, the tribal council, that we could work with Hastings to form a nonprofit. And it didn't say anything else, although we are still meeting with them. But the Hastings and the tribe decided to put the nonprofit on the back burners for now. So, that's when we became involved. and more actively at the beginning of the year, trying to build a relationship with these people and get to know who they are to see if we need to talk to them.
Deb, I'm wondering, how much of this history did you know about? Because my grandmother was a Pomo from Northern California, and we didn't talk really about history at all in our family. I didn't really learn much about this at all in high school. I learned a lot about it. I mean, they talked about the more positive aspects because she was a well-known basket maker, and I don't think they wanted to go to the dark places. And I just wonder, what was your experience like growing up and into adulthood?
Well, I grew up in Sonoma County, just right there, an hour above you, in San Francisco. And when my mother said we were going home this weekend, we all knew we were coming here to the reservation. So that's how we held it in our heart. Like you say, they didn't like to pass on the negative things that happened. But as her children became more educated, my mother started opening up and sharing those things. And sharing very sad things, like when she had her first moon, that they had her grandmother and a neighbor had a ceremony for her. And then they whispered in her ear, this will be the last time. So, you know, we missed out on some of those things because it wasn't meant to be. They were taught not to do it, like our language, which is coming back, by the way. But when we got more educated? It was during, the takeover of Alcatraz. It was that pivotal point in Native life where we wanted to get to know more about ourselves, not that we were just Indians from this reservation.
Right.
And I have an older brother who's passed away now, William Wandussen. And he was also a professor. He was at UCLA and New Mexico, Chicago, and New Orleans he was teaching at, and he did a lot of research and had brought home some information from the Newberry Library, which was talking about some of the genocide. And I can remember reading that when I was in high school, and it just turned my stomach. I couldn't finish reading it. And so that was the exposure. And then hearing about all of the things that happened to everybody else didn't hit home as much until we were asking, you know, where are all of our people in the valley? There were not very many Yuki people or Yuki families. And we were wondering why, if we had populated this. And so little by little things, you know, came out. But research, I'm thankful to be born in a time when we can have the internet and be able to look up these things and to look up the good and the bad. Looking for the truth, and the balance of life is always looking at the negative and positive, and making your knowledgeable decisions.
Such a great way to put it, especially now. That is Deb Hutt, a Yuki tribeswoman who lives in the Round Valley. And today we are talking about the decision to change the name of UC Hastings College of the Law, what went on behind the scenes, what is next. We're also joined by Dr. Brendan Lindsay, Associate Professor of History at Cal State University Sacramento, author of the incredible book, Murder State, California's Native American Genocide, 1846 to 1873. Dr. Lindsay, I also want to ask you what this experience has been like for you, because as I said, I mean, we've been wanting to have you on the show. You wrote this incredible book. I can't believe it's been so long now. Time just flies. But in 2012, in your introduction, you have a quote from Serenus Hastings. I'll just read part of it. And he was speaking to Governor John Weller, May 4th, 1859. Now, sir, I have purchased of the state of California, Eden Valley, with school land warrants. I have by the laws of the state, the right of possession. I demand protection from the state. I am attacked by Indians in front and the tax collector in the rear. So Dr. Lindsay, as a professor of Native history, can you just talk about when you first learned about, I mean, Hastings is just one piece of your incredible book, but when did you learn about Serenus Hastings?
I first learned about him as a graduate student, and I probably came across that quote. It would be sometime around maybe 2004 or 5, maybe. And this research actually came out of a project that wasn't seeking to learn anything about Native genocide. I have a fantastic mentor and friend. He's still with us at UC Riverside, Clifford Travzer. And I was looking for a project to do my dissertation on. And he said, well, why don't you look at the way California Indian labor was exploited in the 19th century? And I started to look into that. And I came across just mounting evidence that really very openly atrocities were committed against California Indian peoples. And to the point which I thought that this is a genocide. And, you know, Hastings was just one of these moments where when I found that quote as part of a larger letter to John Weller, who I should mention, John Weller, the governor, is his friend. He doesn't make that known in the letter, but these men were all resettling California in the 1850s, invading and resettling it in the wake of the gold rush. And they were both prominent in politics. They knew one another. They were all in cahoots, you could say, politically, often in business. And I realized that, you know, as prominent as Hastings was, obviously I put that quote up front because it's a very kind of, I don't know if saying it's a very American quote. No one likes to pay their taxes and you demand something for what you pay. And, but in this case, what he's demanding when you find out the context is he's demanding that people be murdered and he's demanding that the survivors be relocated. And in the case of Eden Valley, they'd be taken north into the Round Valley and put on, what they were calling an Indian farm at the time. It eventually became the Round Valley Reservation. And when he wrote this, that had already been there in Round Valley since 1856. He wrote that in 1859. And what's going on in Round Valley is that they're collecting Indian people there under a superintendent named Thomas Henley, who's also, by the way, a business partner of Serranus Hastings. And he's up there, he's running businesses where he takes the internees on the reservation, makes them work as slaves at a sawmill. They're working on ranches of white people squatting on the reservation. And it's despicable when you peel back the layers at a level that I'm so pleased you like my book, but I think I have not even done the atrocity justice. There are not words for it.
You know, Dr. Lindsay, that's the one thing that's so hard about all of this is reading your book and Murder State by Benjamin Madley. You have to put it down many, many times. I mean, I remember breaking down because the detail is so brutal. I mean, it's just what they did to children, what they did to women. I mean, it's just so brutal. I mean, it's torture. It's murder.
Well, if I could interrupt, Rose,
please.
Just when you mentioned the children, I mean, you might even be thinking of that specific episode where they killed a 10-year-old girl because she was being difficult. Mm. That was the quote, difficult. They were hurting her and the surviving girls and women, away from a massacre site, and she was resisting this group of vigilantes, and they just murdered her because she wouldn't stop her resistance. And you know, I did not break down during the process of writing my book or during my research, but I remember I was in Riverside at a genocide symposium. And I presented the research to people for the very first time. And we had invited many of the vibrant California Indian communities down in the Inland Empire to be there. And I tried to speak and give my presentation. And I just wept uncontrollably for 5 minutes. Mm. And the people there were very gracious. But in the aftermath, I realized that I had never grieved, that I had been in my, you know, stone-faced ivory tower mode or whatever it was in writing the book. And then since then, though, I've often struggled not to be emotional when I talk about this.
Hmm. When were you contacted by Hastings' board?
I think, don't take this into court. And I'll tell you, I had just survived. I had been gravely ill on life support.
Oh wow!
Heart pump, ventilator for almost 2 weeks here in an ICU. I'm a cancer survivor and a stem cell transplant recipient, and I've had many complications over the years. And so it was right after one of those episodes. So I'm a little hazy. It was maybe 2017 in, say, October. And I got a call from David Fagman, the dean and chancellor. And let me just say, I'm not sure how the public perceives him or how the media has captured him in some people's minds. But I have a lot of praise for him. He's all along tried to be completely open, transparent. He formed a committee. He commissioned me, but he stepped back from it. He did not interfere with us in any way. And as you know, that initial report, the 29 page one, which isn't really from me necessarily, it's from the committee, and was done, as Deb mentioned, really in consultation with the Round Valley Indian tribes, which, as she mentioned, is a different entity. It really, this whole process was one where they let the facts take them where the facts took them. And so I had just been gravely ill in 2017. I really wrote the report in 2018 and 2019. And I was still, it probably took that long because I was still recovering from that, near-death experience. And so it was really, I think, in 2019, where late in the year, Dean Fagman took possession of the report that I submitted, and we as a committee worked through it, and then came to that recommendation you mentioned, which at the time was, it seems like maybe we shouldn't change the name.
Right.
And some of that was out of the concerns expressed by people like myself, actually, which sometimes surprises people, and the Round Valley Indian tribes. But that came from a position of, you know, once the name changes, then is it time to forget all of a sudden? You know, where does it, you know, that was the concern. You change the name, you erase it, and then people can just move on. And where does that get the people of Round Valley? And that's been, you know, as a teacher, what you mentioned, Rose, what Deb kind of alluded to about learning about all of this is you don't learn about it. It's swept under the rug, but you've seen the mountain of evidence that existed. Right. That's from the newspapers. That's from, a state commission whose findings were published fully in the newspapers as well, on the so-called Mendocino Indian War, which was, you know, really a series of one-sided massacres, glossed as a war. And that was the concern. I think that's it for those wondering why the initial recommendation, maybe not to change the name, it's because that would encourage another silencing. Mm-hmm. If the guy's name is on the building, who's that? Why is his name on the building? And then you have to kind of explain that. And of course, some of the recommendations were about, you know, educational programs, a large exhibit on him, an airing of all the terrible deeds that he helped lead and inspire. And, also the hope that, Soranus Hastings was certainly in the wrong, but he's not unique. There were willing executioners. The public demanded this. These ranchers wanted it, you know. So it's easy to take Hastings and hold him up as the villain, and he's certainly villainous, but you know.
No, it's such a good point. I mean, like I said in your book, Hastings is just one person. There's Leland Stanford. There's so many names that we all pass in our daily life, those of us who live in California. Before we go to break, Deb, I wanted to ask you, Deb Hutt is a Yuki tribeswoman. What are your thoughts about removing the Hastings name? I mean, after the break, we can talk about some of the other things that UC Hastings says that it plans to do. But on the name itself, what are your thoughts about changing the name?
Well, from the group, they basically demanded the change. And the first set of initiatives that the college offered us had the name change. But when that initiative list came back to us the next year, that was taken off. They've given us these initiatives in 3 different years, and we put it on a spreadsheet so we could really take a look at it. But changing the name was very important to us because of who he was. I mean, nobody's going to the campus and pushing over his statue. We didn't ask for that. He's still there. You don't have to see his name, on the title. His statue is right there.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. That is Deb Hutt, a Yuki tribeswoman who lives in Round Valley, California. Dr. Brendan Lindsay is Associate Professor of History at Cal State University, Sacramento, and author of the award-winning book, Murder State, California's Native American Genocide, 1846 to 1873. Today we are talking about the decisions behind UC Hastings College of the Law Board of Directors voting to change the college's name. UC Hastings was founded in 1878 by Serenus Hastings, one of the largest landowners in California, the state's first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. According to the historical record, Serenus Hastings perpetrated genocidal acts against natives in California in the 1850s in the Round and Eden Valleys. And if you'd like to read more about this and go more in depth, you can head over to yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about the decision of the UC Hastings College of the Law Board of Directors to change the college's name. After a lot of research has been done, Dr. Brendan Lindsay releasing his book, Murder State, articles and papers, a lot of people are learning that UC Hastings, founded by Serenus Hastings, perpetrated genocidal acts against Native Californians in the 1850s in the Round and Eden Valleys. And of course, this is not taught in schools in California. Today, we're joined by Deb Hutt, a Yuki tribeswoman who lives in Round Valley. Dr. Brendan Lindsay is Associate Professor of History at Cal State University, Sacramento, and author of Murder State, California's Native American Genocide, 1846 to 1873. Deb, I also wanted to ask you about, in addition to changing the name, UC Hastings says it has a number of other plans. It's going to form a 501c3 in association with the Round Valley tribes to work on the social needs of the community. It says it's going to assist tribal leaders and with other community legal needs, such as contributing resources to local education. It's going to reach out to Governor Newsom's tribal advisor to discuss information about the Truth and Healing Council. They're going to recommend the establishment of an Indian law program at Hastings. What are your thoughts on some of these other plans?
Well, those are very well supported. Like I said, we got those initial offerings in 2019, and they changed each year. They changed. They took things away. They added things. And like you said, they were talking about doing a 501c3 with the tribal council. Now, keeping in mind that the tribal council does not represent the Yukis. And the things that they're doing is good. There's actually, I think they have helped the tribe with our broadband issues. And that's the tribe. I know that a lot of Yuki people haven't benefited from that at all. I should say that, you know, of the list, this name change came up because of the New York Times article by Tom Fuller. But actually, although it was on our list and it was number one, it didn't mean that it was, you know, the most immediate or that we needed to take care of that first. We wanted to address the issues of the genocide of our people. We'd like to know where their bones are so that we can properly take care of them. Mm. We'd like to find out what we can do about the land that was stolen, if anything. I know the Department of Interior has a program called Land Back where they try to help you deal with your land, not necessarily get it back. But and I should say that, you know, we've been working with the Mendocino National Forest and the Bureau of Land Management and have an outstanding relationship with them for the last 20 years. They do their NEPA and they do include us. We actually, as a Yuki group, had to fight for that right in 1998. When the forest wanted to partner with the tribe to protect the sites that were up there, which are all Yuki sites, and the tribe didn't want to do it. And so we had to get our elders behind us and show up at the next meeting and say that we wanted it to happen, and it did. And and we've been taking care of that since. There's other things that we needed to talk about, like when our Yuki Cemetery, there's several cemeteries up here, a Wailaki Cemetery, a Namalaki Cemetery, but we had our Yuki Cemetery, and it was in somebody's allotment. And when they sold their allotment out of trust into fee, our cemetery went with them. The tribe didn't stand up for it, and neither did the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And for several decades, we were prevented from visiting our ancestors there. So now we have no markers. Mm. We can't even see the individual graves. So dealing with other issues, that name was not number one on our list. There's a lot of other things to talk about.
You know, just listening to you talk, Deb, when you pull back and look at the atrocities that happen in California, I mean, right now the numbers are between 1846 and 1873, California's Indian population plunged from 150,000 to just 30,000. It's also so important to talk about the huge number of tribes in California, the languages that were spoken, so many languages. And so as you said earlier, which I thought was so beautiful, there's so much dark information here, but it's also amazing to think about life before the settlers arrived, and just how you know people thrived in the different cultures and the languages and the trading. And I mean, that's amazing to think about. We don't really talk about that enough. But there's so much to still learn. And I just wonder, as a member of the Yuki tribe, it's just so big. I mean, we're barely taught the truth, and then we have to say, all right, now what? So how would you like this all to kind of play out?
Well, just that you realize that we are here. And we actually wrote a paper because we felt we were being ignored and left out on the status of the Yuki and where we are, where we've been, and the chronology of what's happened on our land and how it's affected us. I should say that, quite frankly, the newer generation, this latest generation, they do not like the name Yuki. Yuki is a Wintun word meaning enemy. So every day we get to be called enemy. We have 7 triblets here in the valley and one on the coast, and we all had our own names, and that's how we introduce ourselves. We have, as this group, have tried to come up because we formed a nonprofit to make it easier for some of our bureaucratic friends to be able to deal with us directly. So we tried to come up with a common name. And one of the commonalities of all of our names ends in Nome, N-O-M, Nome, which means people. So we had, you know, mountain people, valley people. So out of that, the number one is Poe. So we formed Poe Nome. And so that's actually how we prefer to be spoken about. And some of us don't even want that. They want their tribal name. This has been hard, trying to educate ourselves and bringing up the realities of what happened. But, you know, we're talking about 1846. Well, right. You know, the East Coast, what, 1492 was when Columbus came here, supposedly, and all of this westward movement happened at the gold rush time, most of it right here to the coast because of the gold. And it's, you know, it's not like people didn't have a choice to take sides. There were those people, the good people, so to speak, that wrote down this record, protested, hid the Indians, you know, that fought against what was happening in the federal government and here in the state government. They, you know, their families, they forgot they left persecutions and no resources and came to this beautiful country. And they should have brought their good influences, you know, not all these negative ones and the capitalism, that greed. And you talked about Hastings and his associates, and I'll call them associates because Henley and Stanford and Hall, you know, they had this relationship back in the East Coast before they even came here. And so you can see them, you know, climbing their ladders, becoming lawyers and politicians back in the East Coast. And when the westward movement comes, oh, you know, we can go that way and we can become rich and wealthy and famous. And you know, they had their dreams. And so, you know, you can say, well, you know, what of all these people here? Well, not all the people, maybe not all the settlers, and definitely not all the people nowadays in this valley support what went on. And like you say, with history, they didn't even learn about it. Right. I'm very grateful to what I read in the New York Times article that the Creighton Rancheria is working on that curriculum now, the truth to be told. And it's sad that even here in our valley, that our local school district does not teach it as such. Some people say it's too gruesome. You know what? We need to learn from that. Mm-hmm. And we have our different prejudices. I mean, can you imagine that the tribal prejudices that happened when the other tribes were forced in and calling us enemy don't transpire to today? It's been a hard, rugged road for these Yuki people here. I was born and raised in Sonoma County, but being born and raised here and looked down upon is a story that oral histories that we're getting from our elders. And it was hard for them. If you married in, that was different. And now we're all married in, and we also have other nationalities, and we have all sorts of people that live in this valley now. Right. Yeah.
Well, that is Deb Hutt, a Yuki tribeswoman who lives in Round Valley, California. We're talking about the name change of UC Hastings and also just the wider issues of how the history of California should be taught and where we should take it. Once we learn the truth about the history, then what? That's the other big question that we really have to grapple with. Dr. Brendan Lindsay is Associate Professor of History of Cal State University, Sacramento, author of Murder State, California's Native American Genocide, 1846 to 1873. Dr. Lindsay was commissioned to put a report together for the Hastings Board. Dr. Lindsay, when you talk with Native people, because there's just so much again. I mean, Leland Stanford solicited volunteers, I'm just reading from the Chronicle, for his Civil War era army campaigns against California Indians. and as governors signed into law appropriation bills to fund those killing expeditions. So there's Stanford. You've got Sutter. That's all over California. John Sutter enslaved hundreds of Native people. Fremont. Fremont's name is all over the Bay Area. Same kind of thing. Fremont's men attacked Indians on the Sacramento River. It just goes on and on. So when you talk to Native people, what do they say about how to ensure that this history is taught? And then where do we go from there?
Well, you know, something Deb said earlier really maybe speaks to this. Deb had mentioned if the school hadn't been proactive with a little nudge from Professor Briscoe's op-ed, if you know, when Indian peoples bring this forward, historically it doesn't produce much. And that's kind of a truism, not just in this case, but oftentimes. And so, you know, there's been efforts before to try and get this into the curriculum. And California is one of the few states that does have a state K-12 curriculum. And for social sciences, social studies, and in many ways, it's quite good, but it really ignores Native American genocide. And so I think the recent moves by the governor, particularly the Truth and Healing Commission that you mentioned a little bit ago, Rose, maybe there's some opportunity there for this to finally make it in. As an educator myself, I'm teaching. I'm the California history specialist at Sac State, and I teach California history, all of it, from pre-contact to the present day. And particularly when you take the course that's pre-Transcontinental Railroad, students are, supposed to have learned their California history in fourth grade. And, you know, most of them have built a styrofoam mission or learned a Spanish reel dance or, you know, when I taught in SoCal, panned for fake gold at Knott's Berry Farm. But there's never any context, you know, there's never any mention of colonialism and empire beginning with the Spanish in 1769 or, you know, the transition to Mexican rule in 1821. I have students, adult students, who don't know that California was part of New Spain or part of the Republic of Mexico. They just think that Hispanic people lived here, and but no explanation for why. And some people, I think, actually, without the presence of Indian gaming, some of them would think that there were no Indians in California at all, right, given the way that the history is taught. And that in itself is a problem, because all of my students think all California Indian tribes have gaming and that it's made them all fabulously wealthy, which is so far from the truth. I'm sure Deb could speak to that. It's certainly not the case. And so, education, I think, is also of paramount importance for how we're able to move forward. If you have a population of Californians who have no knowledge of even of the issues you're talking about, how much more difficult is it then to have restorative justice, to have people behind the idea of, you know, returning land or guaranteeing water rights or guaranteeing other rights to other resources like timber. And so, or mineral rights for that matter. And so I think it's of paramount importance that we begin to educate, telling those tough stories. I think a fourth grader can hear about atrocities of the ones that of the type that occurred, because we live in a world today of atrocities They're certainly well aware of what rape and murder is. And they're aware of a violent world that we live in. And so I think it's okay to teach kids in grade school about what happened. Otherwise, you produce what I see semester after semester. I have to convince, you know, I would hope I'd have some credibility walking into a classroom, but there's some students I really have to work hard on to convince that this isn't just made up. You know, I have to bring up the digital images of newspaper headlines from the 1850s that say exterminate them, from papers like the Chico Current or other papers. And so it's a hard sell because they have received a whitewashed, and I use that term intentionally, whitewashed education that's triumphal, that's celebratory, that leaves out all the bad things and there's only the good. And when someone presents them with the, you know, the bumps, bruises, and warts of our actual history, all of a sudden now we've got a culture war on our hands. And, you know.
Right. Can I say something about the education? If you don't educate with truth, it comes out in the ignorance is just fear. You know, people get fearful of it and they don't want to be educated at that point. And so we need to bring this in early. The atrocities that happened with the Holocaust, the atrocities that are happening now. We used to watch the Vietnam War, people getting killed on our television while we were eating dinner. So we need to grow up. You know, people in other countries, they've had war in their countries. You know, we've had the Civil War, but they understand what that effect is. And let me tell you that the long-term effects are called PTSD. Mm. It's when we became a minority in our own land, when the other Indian tribes were forced in. We didn't have the population to support a candidate to stay on the council, and they didn't appoint a seat for, you know, the indigenous. But the PTSD of being annihilated, that tried to be annihilated, and then you have your enemies that are in charge of you and your land. And to this day, when we don't get protection for our sites, our village sites here in the valley, and, you know, we get better treatment of our sites with the federal government here, they don't care about it as much. And that weighs heavy on us. And if you can't get through to the tribal government, the BIA sure won't make them listen to the fact that they need to do a full report on it. And marijuana growing up here, the state requires NEPA, but if you pay them $5,000 more, you know, then you get a waiver. The creator works in mysterious ways and the right times, whether it's early or late. Take them all. He saved Ben. He threw his cancer for this time, a time, you know, when people need to hear the truth. And they don't believe it if we tell them that truth, but he can bring out references and say, here's the evidence. And they'll sit up and listen. It's a time for us to heal and grow over this. That's the better things to look for, not to fight over a name change. Like I said, the only reason, I'm sorry, but I feel the only reason that the college jumped on that name change so fast was they had the public at large in the world making comments, and a donor of $10 million that said if they didn't change their name, that he was going to keep it. Or that's what I'm reading in the comments anyway. But education, we need a better education. And the reason we ask for educational help here in the Valley is because around Valley School District is one of the lowest of the low group performing students. And that's a shame when our whole school district is maybe 350 students. Only 350. We should be able to give them a hand-fed education. But I don't know budgets and stuff, but education will free you. We've got to teach people to read. Do you know how people don't read anymore? Education is really needed. At home, here, and everywhere. And the truth. we can take it. Well, Dan, thank you so much for all your work. And Rose, I thank you for your for inviting us on to bring this to light. And somebody wanted to hear us. You know, somebody wanted to hear our side. We are tickled. We're delighted.
Yeah, you know, I was struck by Dr. Lindsay. He was being honest, but it's sad to hear that sometimes the tribal members, Native people, will speak the truth and it's ignored until books come out, until the New York Times, San Francisco Chronicle writes an article, and then it gets some traction. How can we change that, Deb, in our final minute?
How can we change that? Oh, we've got social media now. But, you know, again, it's got to start young. We have to get people, I mean, people don't get this kind of an education until they're in college. We need to give that to them and set them up. I'm sorry, I just go back to education. Ben, maybe you have a better solution or another.
Well, Deb, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Deb Hutt is a Yuki tribeswoman who lives in Round Valley, California. Dr. Brendan Lindsay is Associate Professor of History at Cal State University, Sacramento. He's author of Murder State, California's Native American Genocide, 1846 to 1873. Dr. Lindsay was commissioned to write a report for the UC Hastings School of Law. Dr. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us, and we'd love to have you back to talk about the other sections of your really incredible book, Murder State.
I'd be happy to come back and join you. Thank you. Great. For having me today. And thank you to Deb for all of her, really observations that we can't get anywhere else.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate both of you. You can find more information about the UC Hastings College of the Law Board of Directors voting to change the college's name. There are a lot of articles, and you can learn more about Serenus Hastings. And also check out Murder State. It's a tough read, but so, so important. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.